Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Elevated Perspectives Podcast. Today, we have some super special guests, and we cannot wait to get into this episode.
All right, so we have Mark and Namanda here. Am I saying it right, Namanda? Yeah. Okay, so I just want to have them introduce ourselves. We are sitting in beautiful Mexico City, and this is actually our first conversation, so I'm interested to learn about y'all's story, what you're doing here in CDMX, and what brought y'all here, what inspired you to come. And then we'll just get into it. So yeah, if you guys can introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Namanda. I'm a software engineer and vocal coach, DJ now too. Okay. And and I also run an event page here called The Move _ CDMX. And we not only post events that are often geared towards Black people, but we also put on our own events or collaborate with people on events too.
Amazing, yeah. Amazing.
And excuse me, I'm enjoying some agua mineral here. But my name is Mark. I'm an entrepreneur and also a comedy writer. And together, Namanda and I run some really fun events here in Mexico City.
I love it. So we love a Renaissance woman, but we just have a Renaissance couple. I feel like y'all do so much and you're really into everything. And I feel like for anyone, especially if you're Black transitioning into Mexico City, like The Move, the events that y'all put on, the community that you foster is like a really big deal. You can just kind of drop in and already feel like you have like built-in friends and like something to do. And there's the flyers that go up. It's amazing. So I'm curious, before I guess we even get into like the how and why you wound up here, but what's sort of like the passion, the purpose, the goal behind putting on these events and building this community?
I feel like you kind of described it already. It's that feeling of like being able to just jump in there and feel like you have a community. Because when we first came here, we didn't have a community. Like, we didn't know anybody. It was hard to know where to even find what was going on, because a lot of things before we're kind of like hidden in these WhatsApp groups and people would post there. And if you don't know about the WhatsApp groups, how are you going to know about the events?
Yeah.
And so, you know, everyone knows about Instagram, and so we just wanted to make something like accessible for people visiting or just moving here, especially to find those things and find that community.
And I feel like The Move was like the first thing that we saw when we got to Mexico City. I think even before getting here, deciding to move here, people were already linking it in the Facebook group and in the WhatsApp group. So it's like, okay, I instantly started following, like, while we were in Atlanta still planning this whole move out. So it's definitely having the impact you guys think it will have. Like, let me just start saying that. But yeah, let's dive into like why y'all came to Mexico City.
Yeah. Well, we met in Tulum, Mexico. Yeah, so we met there on her birthday trip. I was living there at the time. I just kind of got into the whole remote work, living abroad type thing.
Gotcha.
And we hit it off. At the time, I was working for the biggest dating app company in the world, which is called Match Group. And I wanted to, I just wanted to have that experience of living abroad a little bit. As an adult, because I lived abroad as a kid as well. We met. It was her last weekend there. And it was my, like, second...
Like your first weekend, right?
My first
weekend,
like, second or third day there. We hit it off and... it's interesting. As far as coming here to Mexico City, we'd traveled around a lot together because she's from Texas and I'm from New Jersey. So we were just traveling to places like Medellin, which we talked about earlier, LA, Atlanta. We went to all these different places, 12 different trips.
Mexico City is actually one of them too.
One of them, yeah. So we went on 12 different trips before we started living together. But the place that we settled on was Mexico City, and it was because actually we were on our family's farm in Uganda one day, East Africa and everything. And we were sitting on that farm, we were just hanging out and talking, and I said, hey, make a list of the characteristics, 10 characteristics that you would care about in a city you'd want to live in. And we took time separately from each other and wrote down what are the things we want. For me, I wrote Black-owned businesses to support, a stand-up comedy scene, walkability, things like this. We separately wrote that for 5 to 10 minutes. After those 5 to 10 minutes, y'all, we literally had 90% the same things on our lists. Mm-hmm. And Mexico City had all of those things. So that was what made us decide to be here.
That's so interesting, because we've struggled to find where we want to where we want to have our home base. So we were living like nomadically and just running around with the kids, by the way, which is like insane. It's an insane lifestyle to live. But our hard decision was, you know, what is actually going to check all the boxes for us? Because we both wanted similar things, but also different things as well. So all of 2023, we were traveling from Mexico to Colombia, down to Brazil, to Spain, back to Mexico, trying to just figure out, should we even settle down? Should we continue traveling and finding that home base? And in Mexico City, definitely checked all the boxes. We had been here before, visited, and then also took a scouting trip just to make sure, again, is this where we want to live? Because signing a lease is like, it's a big commitment.
Such a commitment. And we're both Libras. So I feel like the indecision and the commit, like we're not beating any allegations there as far as like being able to like make up our minds and commit to something. It was quite a lot. But I love the concept of like being intentional. Because one thing that I'm hearing, and I get all like, you know, gooey and like Libra butter, like the love story behind it all. But one thing that I think I hear like woven into that is this notion of like being intentional. Like you're living apart, you're intentionally coming together, you're intentionally making time for each other. You're intentionally, you know, sitting down and saying like, okay, if we're going to continue forward, we have to make sure that we're really aligned here. I'm curious what some of those things on your list, like some, I know you mentioned the comedy scene of Black-owned businesses, like what did the list sort of like look like? And now that you're here, I guess part two to that, which things on the list have you found to be more or like less important? Like did the importance of what was on the list actually stack up to like what you thought when you sat down and originally put it together?
I need to remember like what it even had on my list, but I know like for me, just like proximity to nature is something that's important to me, and as well as walkability, like coming from Texas, like that's not really a thing. Like you have to have a car to get around. And I knew that, you know, I just want to be somewhere. And after traveling, like being able to just like walk to the grocery stores is something that I really enjoy doing. And then also just like somewhere where we can build a community. I remember just like diversity was important for me, even if it wasn't just like just Black people, but if at least like we can be somewhere. And obviously, we're still in Mexico, so there will be times where we'll be the only Black people, but we're somewhere where it's likely that there might be at least, like, one or two other Black people here, or at least someone of some other race that are around, and things like that were important to me.
I think which means, I think also what you mean by that is, like, feeling appreciated as a Black person, right? Even if, whether it's, like, if there's Black people around or not, like, you know, There's a difference between being tolerated versus being appreciated.
Yeah.
You want to be appreciated, not just tolerated.
Yeah. So, I don't want to be othered in a space. Yeah.
Well, you said a lot with like spending time on your family's farm in Uganda. So your family is from Africa. You both have visited. And I want to talk about diversity because that's one thing, like leaving Atlanta to come abroad, it's less like we want to see Black people, but we also just want to see travelers. We want to see other ethnic groups. So like I talked about before starting, like we lived in Guadalajara. We were there for about 8 months and it lacked so much diversity, which like no fault to them. It's just not a city people go to visit. Like no one's really heard of Guadalajara, second largest city in Mexico, but like it just lacked that diversity. And what it felt like for us was like, yeah, we were othered. And everywhere we go, it's just like you're the only Black person there. People are kind of just staring because they've never really seen Black people before. And it's not a great feeling, obviously. Like you just, so what has your experience been like just living in Mexico, period, as a Black person? And like why choose it over like somewhere where Black people are, like Africa? Because people ask us all the time, why not just...
Why aren't you in Africa? Why don't you go to Senegal?
And it's like, it's complicated.
There's a lot of shots you have to get to move from country to country, and it's expensive. Yeah. It's not close. These are big... That's a whole other rant for a whole other time, but...
Speak on it.
Curious. Like, have you seen the paperwork?
Like, the U.S. is right there. Mexico's right here. Like, it's baby steps, you know, for us at least. So, yeah, what do y'all think about just diversity and feeling accepted here? Or in Mexico in general.
Yeah, I mean, I actually would like to live in Africa, unlike them. just kidding. Yeah, just kidding about that. Yeah, no, it's all good. I would like to live there. It'll be nice. But as far as diversity, yeah. I think our notion of diversity being Americans or Canadians in your case, like, is different from, or it's very nuanced when you think about a place like Mexico, right? Where the majority of the population is indigenous Mexican, right? And, you know, at the end of the day, they are what, Latinos, we would call them in the United States. But the entire country is that. So in and of itself, I think it already is diverse, in a sense. But yeah, I guess it just kind of goes back to that notion of, you know, feeling appreciated no matter where you go. Because yeah, if you're getting stared at and people are giving you a hard time or they're talking to you any kind of way, that you don't want to deal with that. I'll be honest in saying that we haven't really had any negative experiences here. And we're people here who do something that has us in the public, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So the fact that that's all the case and we still, you know, we are shown love as far as the people who we meet here. I think that speaks to the fact that, you know, the Mexican people have been incredible hosts to all of us who are coming here. We're in their city at the end of the day. We're in their country, right?
Of course.
And they've been so welcoming to us. I really can't complain at all, but
yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I think also the perk of being in Mexico City versus like Guadalajara or somewhere more regional is it is an international city and people are getting more used to seeing Black people in a way. And there will still be those occasional stares or something. Or I know one time, I think it was during a political rally, like they had brought people in from those regional areas and a family, they're actually very sweet. They wanted to take a picture with me and be like, oh, but you know, call me beautiful, which is nice. So, I mean, you can take it as like offensive, like, but I knew that they were coming from a place of like admiration, just like, they appreciated me, and it wasn't like it could have been like a total different way of being like, they, I don't know, they could have called me names or something because I was different, but they were super nice. And but for most of the time, it's just like either I'm just living my life and no one bothers me, or like the occasional stare, which can happen anywhere, I think, in like a non-majority Black space. So
I think it goes to this important point. Since we've been abroad and traveling and like living in different areas, I always kind of like come back to this thought. It hasn't been fully formed in 2 years, but it's this general thought of like having like entering international spaces, other countries, traveling abroad with like this like African-American chip on your shoulder, this Black chip on your shoulder, where someone's staring at you and it's very easy for the immediate thought to be like, racist, what do you want? Like, what are you worried about? Like this whole thing, right? Because we set up these barriers to protect ourselves because of where we come from and blah, 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 intersectionality and all of that. But I think there's something really beautiful about traveling and being forced into that space of like, it's almost like a dissonance where it's like, I can tell that they're nice. I can tell that they're curious. I can tell that like these things, but there's something in me that's still just like, why are you staring at me? Why are you worried? What do you think? What are you going to do with that picture? Are you going to put a monkey emoji next to it on your privacy? Like there's this whole thing. And so I'm curious if there's anything in your time abroad, whether it's traveling or living here in Mexico City specifically, where you've had to sort of do some unpacking related to your Black identity and how like you have to like sit in your own Blackness, but like being Black abroad is different than being Black in these States. I'm sure being Black in Uganda is different than being black in Toronto is different, you know what I mean? It's different everywhere. So I'm curious if y'all have had any experiences where you sort of have to sit back and reflect or unpack or sort of like think differently about your own Blackness in the context of where you are. I'm sorry if that's a very big, sometimes I just, no, the questions get.
That's an interesting question. I have something.
I
think that we were so fortunate. I mean, we've been extremely fortunate and blessed this entire time we've been living here. But literally our first month living here, we got invited to a Thanksgiving dinner at a friend's house. Shout out to Drew. It was all Mexican people for the most part. Mm. And then there was a Black guy with his like Dominican wife, and then we were the Black couple there. But other than that, it was all Mexican folks.
Yeah.
And this was again our first month living here, and we had with these people. They were fortunate enough, we were fortunate that they were kind enough to speak to us in English, you know, and include us in the conversation. Yeah. But we had the deepest conversation about race in Mexico, about how they perceive race, about how they perceive blackness, about how blackness is perceived in the country, about, we talked about our experience being black folks in America and, you know, why black people would want to live in a place like Mexico. It was such an interesting cross-cultural conversation that we had. And some of those people, including one of them in particular, my friend Cesar, is like one of our closest friends now and literally met in that conversation. So as far as like unlearning things, I think that, okay, I was fortunate because my mother is a French teacher in America. She won a Fulbright when I was in eighth grade. So we lived in France for a year. It's like a US government program where basically you live in another country for a year, and then a French woman's lived in New Jersey for a year in our stead. And so that was my first time seeing like, oh, America is like the most impactful country in the world. I mean, from a cultural standpoint, that America is the most culturally impactful country in the world. And black Americans specifically are some of the most admired people in the world from a cultural standpoint. We can talk about a lot of the other pitfalls that are aligned with that as well. But we went there and, you know, they showed us so much love. And it put, for my brother and I, put a lot of context around, you know, blackness and around around, you know, just how people perceive us. And it's normally positive. It's normally, oh, you got, we love basketball. You know, we love we love rap music. You know, we love Eddie Murphy. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it is. Right?
They
want
Beyonce.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, nothing like that. Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Oprah? All right, too far.
Okay. That's crazy. Yeah, that, I would definitely, you know, I remember we were in Rome when I was 14 or 15. And this woman, this is messed up. This woman said to my mom, he said, "Ciao, Whoopi," to my mom. my mom looks nothing like Whoopi Spears, nothing at all. Anyway, it's like 2007, so it's not Whoopi now. This is Whoopi, you know, sister act Whoopi at least. You know, not to say I'm a very pro-black person. You know, in the United States, I support black businesses as often as I can. I run, obviously, a black-owned company. I help black people find out where they're from in Africa. And we have other businesses that we do together that help black folks as well as other people. But I think that oftentimes people, including Canadians, by the way, I had a conversation 2 days ago with my friend from Toronto, who's a brother. And we had a deep conversation about race and, like, black Americans versus, like, people
the
in
the black
Canada.
Canadian experience.
Yeah.
We have to get into that. We've been doing it ever since the Kendrick Drake beef.
I think
kind of, like, brought it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're not the same ethnicity as
me. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's ethnic.
15 years in Atlanta. That's, years in Atlanta.
Yeah. That's funny. Just like Drake, you went to Atlanta to...
am I 21 to average?
But yeah, you know, all of our... The point is, I think all of our experiences are nuanced. It's important to learn about other people's experience, to ask questions, to be curious, and not to judge, you know? Mm-hmm. And not to make people feel othered either. So I think that regardless of what your background is, that's important.
I love to hear that. I mean, especially you talking about you growing up doing a year in France. Obviously, we have kids here in Mexico. Mm-hmm. They have been spending the majority of their life just traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And majority of that just in Mexico. So we love to hear, like, what is it like actually growing up and living abroad and coming back and, like, having that experience? Because some days I'm just like, are our kids going to be okay? Like, my daughter, she's 2. She's just speaking Spanglish because they go to a Mexican school.
That's cool.
She's speaking English and Spanish and just blending it together. And I'm just like, I don't know what it's going to turn into as you get older. And then our son, like, he is the only black kid in his class. He's the only black kid in school. But Mexico City is diverse enough that there are a couple other Americans. There's people of other races as well. Mm-hmm. So he's not just like the only other, but like part of us is like, we have to get him around more black people, but also just like, it's interesting, man, especially becoming a parent. So
yeah.
I don't know if y'all were thinking about kids, but I'm just letting you know, it's interesting.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
I see us doing something similar, honestly. You know, obviously it's not just me, it's us.
Yeah.
But I mean, it would be interesting. Not even just interesting. I think it would be
The same way that my mind was open to the world, mm-hmm. living as a 14-year-old in a big city in France, where I was from a small town, New Jersey, in the United States, never left the East Coast before that point. I can only imagine how impactful that is on a young person's life, you know what I mean? To live in a beautiful place like Mexico. Yeah, I can only imagine.
It takes a village, and I think that's part of why we are intentionally looking for that community, because it's hard to just pack up and leave having no friends, no family. But travel's addicting. You know, it's not like the baby gets here and you just want to stop, man. Mm-hmm. So like I could see y'all definitely exploring that as well.
Yeah.
We put the baby on the plane. 10 weeks. Wow. Checked up the juices. Hit the airport. Dang. It was fine.
Yeah. Because we always said we could go back.
Yeah.
If we just crashes and burns and like we're fucking it up, like we could go back. So it's nice, you know.
Can I ask you, do you guys just plan on just doing this nomadic thing, or do you plan on like settling down somewhere?
That's the big question. I think the kids will force us to settle down.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think that they're going to be okay with like packing up and going to a new school every year, right. or a new, and we haven't figured out a way, because I'm not totally on board with the whole homeschooling thing. So I haven't figured out a way to like have childcare, have your kids like in an environment to learn without just like enrolling them in a new school. And that to me is the most challenging part of just packing up and moving, because I have to work, we have to work, we have to figure out a way to even have a break from parenting. So we've actually found a few programs that are out there starting to host like families for digital nomad retreats, host families for long stints and stays. So as time goes on, I think it'll be more common. But it's not all fully fleshed out yet. So I think finding a home base for me just has to be the right place, but I still would love to be in a place to just be flexible to pick up and travel, because we are content creators. We are also in the travel community, so like we get opportunities to go travel. And so I think a home base plus like just being able to like go off for a few months and come back is the goal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Courtney has...
I'm chaotic. I'm the chaotic good here, where I personally feel like we can just do whatever we want. We just have to decide what that is and make it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if it's practical or if it's realistic or if it sounds insane. But I do think, you know, to be fair, at the end of the day, everything comes down to like what's best for the children,
of course,
you know, as they grow and develop and their preferences and can express those. And we see their temperament comes in, even like homeschool. I was ready to homeschool. I was gung-ho. I was with it. I was in all the groups. I was looking at all the information. I bought the books. And then my son's personality came in. And I started to understand why there are all those memes about like parents just yelling, if Johnny had 5 apples, and getting frustrated. Like I started to realize, I was like, I don't know if it's me or if it's him or if it's us or if it's Kuda. I don't know what's going on, but I don't think this is going to work. And now the second one, she's 2, her personality is coming in. And I look at both of them and I'm like, I don't know. Miss Rachel might have to teach you your colors, you know? So I think it just depends. I just want to be poised and positioned to be able to go places and connect with people and see stuff. I think part of travel is just connecting with the people and building those bridges and making those connections. And I love it, like sitting here with y'all. And then for me also, part of travel is just like, I want to like eat fruits I've never heard of before. You know, I want to see what the sky looks like from like different places on the planet. Like, it's just very like sort of like vapid. So I think we'll just have to like prioritize and see, because we could have kids. I think if we ship them off to a nice boarding school when they're around 14 or 15, you know what I mean? And then they have a home base. We can come visit them there, but we can just sort of be nomadic. I don't know. Yeah. Nobody judge me. Optional, good quality boarding school. It's not like, you know, some Matilda stuff.
I'm judging you silently. And so is he. But now, I want to hear how the comedy came about. Comedy, you are DJing, Namanda, and you are doing comedy. I don't know if you're both doing comedy. Like, how did that start? And yeah, talk about it, promote it. Let's hear it.
We moved here. I had just started doing comedy. Literally, I started doing comedy here, pretty much. We also had just moved here to Mexico City, and then we started the comedy show all within, you know, a couple of months of each other. And we've only been living here for like a year and a half, by the way. So like it's been a blessing how much it's changed since that time. But so we started it because, well, I started doing stand-up comedy because you know, we moved here. I tried stand up once at that point, but we moved here, and I just knew I wanted to make friends. I wanted to, you know, kind of build a community and everything. So, or not build a community, but just kind of be a part of a community.
Yeah.
So that was really it. I just wanted to make friends, and I'd heard in the one of the group chats that there was a stand up comedy show. So I texted the person who texted that, and I said, "Hey, like, can I join? Like, can I be in this comedy? You know, not in the show, but can I just be a part of this?" And he told me there was an open mic. So I went there, and, you know, shout out to Martin Leon and Mariana. They basically run the English comedy scene here in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. So started doing stand-up comedy there. She would come along. Some shows were good. Some shows were, you know.
But I was at everyone.
She was at all of them, yeah. And, you know, a very supportive partner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was starting to do stand-up and, you know, bombed the first time. Second time I had people laughing. And the thing that was interesting to me, though, was I thought as I got put on a couple of more shows, I started to realize that, you know, what made me initially interested in Mexico City, in addition to all the other characteristics we talked about, was the party called Diaspora, which is an amazing party. Shout out to Q and in Diaspora in general. And like the that party is like so much fun. It reminded me of New York City. It reminded me of where I lived in New York before I moved here. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of like the parties in Brooklyn called Everyday People. And so you're familiar with Everyday People? Okay, mm-hmm. Love that. So yeah, that was like my favorite party, you know what I mean? And Diaspora reminded me of that. So
wasn't it like the first place that you were like, oh, there's black people
there's
here,
black people.
Right?
That's why I realized there's black people in Mexico City, yeah. That was when we were just visiting Mexico City. But I essentially, I thought, you know, there's black folks here, there's this diaspora crowd, but this crowd is not coming to the comedy shows, yeah. Right? And so what I decided to do was, let's create a comedy show for that crowd. Not just for black people, but just for cool people. For people.
Same way.
Yeah.
Everybody. You had Mexican comedians. You had
yes.
That was
an interesting show. That was an interesting show. That was an interesting show.
The girl from New York killed it.
Lauren.
Oh, Lauren. Yep. She's great.
So yeah, I could talk about the comedy. It's called the Comedy Kickback. I could talk about it all day. But to fast forward a little bit, there are cool people that go to Mariana and Martin's show as well. I just meant like, I said cool people meaning I wanted to have people who, like black folks and people who are kind of into black culture. That's what I really meant.
Because a lot of your jokes were like
black. Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Like
that's
black
that's
jokes.
A good point.
Yeah.
My jokes, yeah. I was the person on the lineups that was doing like the, you know, when you're in the hood and da 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 da, and everyone's like, "What are you talking about?" Man?
Yeah,
it's kind of like we've gone to like a Dave Chappelle show in Atlanta, okay. And like the crowd is always surprisingly so non-black, and so some of the jokes, I'm like, "Wait, you're laughing way too hard. You're laughing way too hard right now."
Yeah.
But I get it, and like, and it actually goes to show like there could be like there's already a comedy show here when you got here. Mm. It's interesting to say like you weren't afraid to like go start another one.
No. But yeah, I can finish the thought a bit on that, but like. The important thing is that the folks who had been doing those comedy shows collaborated with us because we wouldn't be able to do it without them.
True.
Mm-hmm. Like our first show we ever did, it wasn't even called the Comedy Kickback. It was
we didn't have a name.
We started them in our apartment. But I forgot to say that part. So we started doing them in our living room.
Yeah, it was birthday party, actually.
It was your birthday party.
And to like put a little twist on the barbecue potluck we were doing, we were like, let's do a comedy show.
Yep.
And people really enjoy it.
It's just like pivotal in y'all's relationship.
Very much so.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point.
That's an interesting point.
I'm not going to go down the astrology.
Yeah,
level,
no.
But I'm curious.
Right? I'm a Capricorn.
You're a
Capricorn. Yeah. And he's a Taurus.
You're a Taurus.
So, earth signs.
Huh.
Yeah.
I'm a Taurus.
Leo rising, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. I won't do it after.
Yeah, after. I know my big three, though.
Yeah.
Because since you started not only the Comedy Kickback, but you're also. With CDMX The Move, are you guys like promoting the other events or do you guys also help plan those events too?
Both, yeah.
Yeah, it depends. A lot of it's just like promoting other people's events, but there will be times where people will reach out to like collaborate, often just to kind of like help prioritize theirs, but then also sometimes it is a collab, like a proper collab too.
You're in God's work.
Thank you for saying that. I received that, my brother.
And how does it feel? I mean, how is the experience just connecting with the local owners of these establishments to host those events there? Because now the Comedy Kickback was, I went to, it was like a bar in Juarez. Mm-hmm. And then I've gone to a party at Wallace Whiskey Bar. Mm-hmm. So how has it been just being like, hey, we want to like throw an event here at this space, or, you know, talking to them to collab with the local community?
Yeah. Yeah. So our with our comedy show, I think that would be the best thing to answer that question is speak to that experience. You know, we started in our apartment, but then like it got really big, like on our third show. It was like 15 people the first one, 10 people the second one, third one, the black community learned about it and it was like 60 people in the apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It just randomly came out. Like that's when we first started calling it the Comedy Kickback also.
Yeah, that's when we had a name and everything.
Yeah. And then, you know, from there we've sold out every single show for over a year. You know what I mean? And we've outgrown like two venues already. So yeah, we started off in our apartment, outgrew that. And then we, so as far as dealing with venues, we were fortunate that, you know, shout out to Tiara, Black Sea Cocina. She came, she came to our third one. Mm-hmm. I invited her to come to the third one. And she was like, yo, you should like, how about we bring this to Black Sea Cocina? And I'm so glad she proposed that because we did our July, so literally it was like a year ago now, that show we did at Black Sea Cocina. And I think, you know, I'm just going to say it was a very successful show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a show that had a lot of, had a really big turnout.
Yeah.
And we just had a really good time. We did a roast battle in that show. That was the first time I think in English that had ever been done in Mexico City. And I really thought I was going to win because I'm good at roasting people. I got killed.
The first round,
I got murdered. It was Sairi. It was Sairi Romero. She's like from Venezuela.
Yeah.
She's the homie.
She's like a storyteller. Just like storytelling. Naturally hilarious.
She's an
yeah.
Yo, she killed me. She killed me. Like, and she's like, she's Afro Latina, which I, you know, I learned that after the fact. Yeah. But like, actress. But oh my gosh, yo, I'm gonna be honest. I asked Namanda ahead of time. I said, hey, can you just because the judges were. The judges were Namanda, Tiara, the owner of Black Cocina, and our friend Q, who runs Diaspora. So it was those three judges. We always have judges at our shows. And I asked Namanda, I said, hey, Namanda, let's help me win. You know, just like, you know, influence the judges. I'm putting the show, you know, this is our thing. Like, help me win.
She couldn't help you.
Yeah, get me past Saidi, you know what I'm saying? But man, there was one moment, Saidi was, she was calling on her, like, black community knowledge and stuff like that in her jokes. Mm-hmm. And she was saying some jokes. I remember she said one, the entire room was like going crazy. And I was like, there's no way I can win.
Like, I can't help you.
There's no way. Yeah.
There
probably is. There probably is. I don't want that in there. You're not going to get that footage. That footage is scrubbed from the internet. Yeah, it's deleted and scrubbed. yeah. But yeah, you know, we did those and, so that was great, you know, doing, you know, again, supporting black businesses. And then came to a point where, because in October we did a show where we had people from Wildin' Out, Abbott Elementary, Insecure, shout out to Reggie Conquest, Patrick Cloud, Tyler Chronicles, Courtney B, Mouse Jones, and Trap Karaoke, if you guys are familiar with them. Mm-hmm. They were all in Mexico City. We hit them up and they came and did a comedy show in our apartment. You know what I mean? They were on our show. Mm-hmm. And a part of the Comedy Kickback. We did a great video. That's some footage you definitely can link because that shines me, that casts me in a good light. So that's the one I'm more you know, likely to share. But yeah, so we did that. And then after that point, it just, we'd already been filling out shows, 80, 90 people, but that blew it up even more.
Wow.
And then, yeah, we had to move to a different venue to accommodate all the people. And as far as dealing with the local people, let me tell y'all, man, Santa Leyenda, where we do our comedy show, they open up on Sundays once a month only for the Comedy Kickback.
Wow, that's love.
And that's a Mexican woman-owned business. So we're supporting, you know, supporting her. We're supporting her employees. Mm-hmm. We're also, and maybe we'll get to this later, but we're supporting the Haitian community and the Haitian migrants as well. So, yeah, our experience with dealing with the folks here has been incredible. Yeah, so it's been nothing but love.
I love you.
Obviously, you're here in Mexico. You want to support the Mexican businesses, the local businesses, make sure that you're giving back, pouring into that community as a good immigrant, mm-hmm. not expat immigrant mm-hmm. should, mm-hmm. right? And then also there's this passion for the diaspora, like you just brought up, like the Haitian migrants. We actually have some clothes, we have some kids' clothes set aside that we need to figure out how to get that over to them, those diapers and stuff. Yeah, we have like a whole like pile aside, a whole like pile of like stuff like in the closet. They were like, oh, we need to get this over to like, you know, the Haitian migrant. We just haven't done yet. But so y'all obviously have a passion for supporting the diaspora as a whole as well. Let me ask you, and this is going to sound silly, but bear with me, like, why? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, why care? Why invest? Why pour back? Like, what is it, you know, behind doing what you do? Why do you think that it's important?
Mm-hmm. Like, being here, we don't want to be gentrifiers, you know? We mm-hmm. want to make sure that, like, when we are here, that we are actively supporting the community that we're in, which obviously includes the Mexican community and as a whole Black community, because we are part of those communities. And so, you know, we try to like shop locally and things like that. And a few months ago we teamed up with one of the comedians who is a teacher at a school in the Estado de Mexico, and we turned that comedy show, that was kind of our first like charity comedy show. And we basically raised money for scholarships for some of his students. Mm-hmm. And in May, he invited us to their graduation ceremony to give them their scholarships. And that was kind of, I feel like, part of what helped solidify, like, we are on the right path of things. Mm-hmm. And then, like, helping the Haitian migrants as well, which I'm sure Mark can speak more to.
Yes. Talk to us about the Haitian migrants, because this is a big thing. And I feel like a lot of people who are maybe outside of like Mexico City or other places in like Latin America aren't really tuned into what's going on. There's this whole thing. There's like, you know, humanitarian crisis in Haiti and what's going on in Haiti. And there's that general knowledge. But as far as like the actual people, the communities, why they're here, how they got here and what they need. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first thing I'll say is, we're doing a GoFundMe right now because 90 of them have been displaced from the park they were living
in.
All of them are displaced, but 90 of them are living under one roof, like two bedrooms or something like this. Mm. And they have to pay an exorbitant amount of money per month that they're being charged for rent. They're being taken advantage of, in my opinion.
The link for that will be in the description for this episode. Please pay attention and give what you can when you can't.
Absolutely. Thank you. We're basically, you know, giving to them right now just to help them keep a roof over their heads. But the backstory is, and I'm not going to even tell you that I know the full backstory, but what I do know is this is a group of people. Haitian people are a people who have one of the most beautiful histories in the world, especially if you're talking about liberation and you're talking about self-determination. I'm not Haitian at all, but I've always had so much respect for Haitian history. I love Haitian food, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've just always Piklis. Yeah, I mm-hmm. love that. I love Piklis. Taso kabui is my favorite thing, you know what I'm saying? But so I've just always kind of held them in high regard. But earlier this year, actually, I keep bringing up Q, but my friend Q, he and I got breakfast together, and he said, hey, do you know that there's Haitians living in a park around the corner from here? I said, I had no idea. So he took me over there. And I speak French, so I was able to communicate with them. Mm. And I saw them there, and it's like hundreds, like 400 people were living there. Mm-hmm. They're just living in this park. And, you know, I was confused, because I'm like, what are they doing here? You know, what's this about, right? It was a couple of weeks later, maybe a month later, that we helped organize, or we helped kind of promote an event to just donate more to them.
Right.
And that was an instance where there was a bigger community of us as foreigners hanging out with these Haitians. And we were there for 2 hours. And that's when we started asking ourselves the question, you know, why are they in Mexico City, right? Why are they living in a park? What brought them here? And, you know, it's really deep, and it's really sad. But what we decided to do from there, what I decided to do, because I'm a screenwriter, as I just told you guys, is we made a series of short documentaries, 90-second documentaries, where we asked them in Creole, and I would not be possible without my friend Fabinson, who is Haitian, who who's, I mean, I don't want to say his whole backstory, but he's a very interesting backstory. But he's there like every day.
Yeah, you know? he does so much for them. Like, it will take their clothes, wash it for them, bring it back.
Help them find jobs. Help them find
jobs, get them food.
Yeah. And we, because we do the comedy show, people know that we help the Haitians. But I got to shout out Fabinson because he does, we support him. You know, that's really what I would say. We support him in what he does. So we made these videos where we allowed them in their own language to share their story about why they came here to Mexico. These are people who had to cross the Darien Gap to get here. So I'm talking about Darien Gap, if you're not aware, it's like a forest that they had to cross. Yeah, it's
like the most dangerous passage in the world, right?
Yeah, one of them.
Something
I'm talking about, they had to cross this forest. There were people kidnapping them in there. There were people murdering people in there. There were people doing terrible things to the women in there that I don't want to say. And this stuff was all happening. These people literally put their lives on the line multiple times to get from Haiti to Mexico City. And they literally are going through all this just with the dream to get to America. Mm-hmm. Because they hold the perception of being in America as just heaven. I told you guys we did that first documentary, 90 seconds long, first video, 40,000 views in 2 days, right? Jeez. And then we did another one, same thing. Yeah. And we just put out a third one as well to promote the fact that they need help again, but that they continue to need help. But they told us their stories about what they'd been through. One guy, Kenson, he was an electrical engineer in Haiti, and here he's trying to find work as a dishwasher, you know, trying to. So many of them have a really hard time just getting by. I couldn't tell you guys all the things I've witnessed just being there. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, they're just human beings, right? We're all humans. When I come there and we donate the things, every comedy show, we donate cars full of things for them, right? Cars full of clothing. You know, we've helped find some job opportunities for them, water, you know, the things that they need. And the first time we went there to donate all these things, I remember they're asking me in French. They said, "Hey, are you African?" And I said, "We're all African." You know what I mean? That was my response. But we're just trying to help them out right now. So here's what happened. Early June, they'd all been living in the park. The local sentiment isn't the most positive towards them, and I understand that because you know, imagine if in your hometown, there were just a group of people that just were living in the park there. Eventually you might not love that, you know? As a result, our Haitian brothers and sisters, they'd been subjected to some harsh treatment, I would say, but they've also been subjected to some really, not subjected, but they've also received a lot of love from the neighbors as well, and probably more love than anything else. But they did receive harsh treatment. The craziest thing for me, guys, is one day I was in Juarez on Reforma, and I saw people protesting against the Haitians. They had signs saying, La calle no es albergue, you know, literally saying, you know, the street, the parks, get out of our streets, get out of our parks. We need to get these people out of here, right?
Yeah.
And ultimately on June, I think it was June 6th, early June, it happened. The police came with garbage trucks, with buses, and they kicked everybody out of that park. And that park right now is fenced up and closed up. And they threw out these people's belongings, threw out some of their clothing, they threw out some of their tents, you know, the things they need. So now, when I tell you that they're all sleeping under one roof, I mean, some of them are literally sleeping on the floor. They don't have mattresses or covers, right? So the GoFundMe that we're doing, in large part, is to help them with that. And y'all, this is not my career. I don't come from a humanitarian aid background. Yeah. Neither of us do. But we just saw that there was a problem, and we just believe that we have to help the people who are in need.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing this year with the comedy show.
That makes sense. I mean, you don't have to come from a humanitarian background. Like, we are all human, like you said. Mm-hmm. And like you said, we're all African. Mm-hmm. When we look at each other, it's just like, you could be my cousin, my brother, my sibling. Like, I think that with multiple genocides currently happening in the world, we all ask ourselves, like, we're so helpless, what could we do? It's all the way on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But when you actually look up what's happening in front of you and helping people who are trying to flee, like, a dangerous situation in Haiti to take all the work that they're doing to come here, and living, trying to get to the American dream. It's like, yeah, it's so much wrapped up in it, mm-hmm, because like you said, I understand where the people of Mexico are also coming from, mm-hmm, where they have limited resources. We're currently in a water crisis. Yeah. Like a lot of them don't have it like that either. So yeah, it's a lot. It's, mm-hmm, a lot there, but doing those small parts, what could we donate? Mm-hmm. What could we do to help them just get from out of this specific situation and on to the next one? But mm-hmm, there's a lot there.
Yeah. I think the other thing that's interesting too, and this is a little random, but like having family that came from, fled the Dominican Republic for, mm-hmm, similar reasons, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. You think about like how lighter Dominicans treat darker Dominicans and how those Dominicans treat Haitians, and then the Haitians come to Mexico, and how certain Mexicans are treating Haitians the same way that like in the U.S., like so many people treat like the Mexicans. It's just really interesting because it's like we're all connected, and it's really just the same or something similar happening like over and over and over again in different places with like, you know, slightly different contexts and nuances and histories to it. But I really love what you said, babe, because it is that thing of like, no matter where you are, someone needs help near you. Mm-hmm. Like you may not be able to do anything about what's happening, you know, across the world or in a completely different country, but there's always something you can do right in front of you.
Yeah.
And like that just may have to be good enough, mm-hmm, which is amazing. But we do appreciate y'all's work and what you're doing and the time and energy and effort that you, yeah, pour into it, because it's important. Yeah. It's really important.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so what we have to plug. So we're building a product together, actually.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, we built the comedy show together, we're building, yeah, it's a product together. Mm-hmm. It's called whatsitworth.xyz, but, mm-hmm, it's basically it's an app for people who shop online a lot. And it basically will use AI to look at the product that you're interested in buying and see how much it actually costs to make it. Okay. And then maybe help, yeah, you make a decision on, do you actually want to go through and purchase this, yeah, or not? So, mm, that's what we're building right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, exciting, yeah.
I do too.
It's kind of like the corporation's mad.
Right?
I'm with it.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Cut your theft. You need that $3,000 profit on this product.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And then also when it comes to the resale market, you told me, yeah, this morning, like, yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, you know, like on like Depop or The RealReal or something, people, mm-hmm, will post something asking for like $500 when it was a shirt that they got from Goodwill for $5, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you can like put that in and be like, is it actually worth that? Then that'll help you maybe put in a counter offer or, yeah, avoid getting that altogether.
Mm-hmm. That actually just came out with the Dior handbags.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
Yeah,
where they're actually only, it only costs how much to make it?
Like
$58.
$58.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, much a Dior, mm-hmm, the smallest of smallest Dior bags. I like 10 bands. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, crazy.
And that's the thing, because
like, I come from a product management background. I worked for, you know, the biggest dating app company. And she's a software engineer, so it's, mm-hmm, like we might as well be building stuff together too.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Aww, yeah.
That's kind of where we are now.
Yeah.
Ew,
maybe in part two.
Yeah, part two. Yeah.
Part two, or we're just hanging out.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, so
yeah. Yeah, that works too.
Okay. So, and I, you know, linking with you guys has been amazing. Like, I loved having y'all on the show. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want us to plug or talk through before?
I mean,
if anyone's planning to visit or move to Mexico City, you can follow the move_CDMX, yeah, on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I'm like just now starting to build out the TikTok as well. So, ooh, you can look for it there, okay, too.
TikToking?
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So
yeah, exactly.
Go
yeah.
For sure.
And yeah, he also has his businesses.
Yeah, I have a bunch. one is Afro CNA. We help black people find out where they're from in Africa.
I was wondering what the hat was. Yeah. Apparently, I'm from a tiny island off the coast of like Equatorial Guinea.
Wow.
But I don't actually, it's like Bilko.
Because what did you use? What was the app you used? It wasn't Ancestry.
It was like the African Ancestry.
African Ancestry.
Yeah.
But I'm like, what an obscure island.
Mm-hmm.
Can it be right? I feel, yeah, like I have to go and see if they
look like. Yeah.
This has been dope. We'll definitely have to do it again. And thank y'all so much for taking time out of your day and your very busy schedules to hang out with us. We appreciate it. And also, when are you free to double date?
Hit us up.
I know. We're the ones with kids. Like,
yeah. I know. Like, when are you free? I'm
these never. Kidless people can chill whenever the, you know. Y'all can be anywhere, any day of the week. Like, you know.
It's true.
Yeah. When the kids are in school, that's our time. That's our time to shine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, well.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I forgot. Here's one thing I forgot to say that's, like, cool about the comedy show. So we started
it in our living room. Next month, we're doing it in Soho House, Mexico City.
Yeah.
Oh, love it, love it. Yeah, we'll have to go. We'll see you there. Yeah, yep, definitely come through.
Plus one.
Okay. Nice, yeah.
I'll be there.
What is
it?
Yeah. It's going to be August 6th, and we're
She'll see it on the app in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
We'll find a way. Like, I've been to one of the comedy shows. You have to go, because it's hilarious. It is really fun. And people that are coming to visit Mexico City or planning to move to Mexico City, follow the move, get in the WhatsApp groups. We're going to link all that information in the description below. But, yeah, thank y'all so much for your time today.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And we'll see y'all next time. Bye.